You buy that first property, you have it start to pay for itself over time. It might actually generate a little bit of a profit. Use that profit, use that money that you're still working, and you try to buy that next property, and eventually it's going
to
grow.
You're a working professional, but struggling to balance the workload of your career, family, obligations, and preparing for your financial future? If so, this podcast is for you. You've spent years learning your craft, and now it's time to focus on your financial future. This podcast will teach you what you need to retire wealthy and happy. Let's dive in.
How do you change your destiny from planning to retire in 30 to 40 years down to retiring in 5 to 10 years? In this episode, we have the privilege of hearing from Frank Patilano on how he was able to shorten his timeline on achieving financial freedom through small multifamily real estate.
Good morning and welcome to the Retire Wealthy and Happy podcast. Ben, today we've got Frank Paulano on talking about he's invested in real estate and been able to shorten his timeline on retirement. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, guys.
Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Frank, why don't you take a few minutes and give us a little bit of your background and history?
So it's funny you said the word history because I have a bachelor's degree in history education. So basically, in the early 2000s, my wife and I both became school teachers. Over time, we started to generate a little bit of money to sit in a bank account, and you had to decide what to do with it. So some people enjoy it with lavish vacations. Some people might gamble it away or donate it. We decided to invest it. And over time, we've done very well with it.
Frank, you started out with a triplex, is that right?
Yeah, so we started out about 25 minutes from my house, bought a small triplex as a foreclosure. Did I overpay for it? Absolutely. I did luck out a little bit on market. But what's funny about that is that I didn't make money the first couple of years in that deal, but it was gradually fixing up things, raising rents, and just keeping in tune and taking care of it that it started to really do well.
Frank, you live in Rhode Island, is that right?
Yes.
Is there any place in Rhode Island you can't get to in under 20 minutes?
Yes, but it is small overall, but we joke that anything over about an hour or an hour and a half is like a date.
So after you invested in the triplex, how long did it take you to get to your second one, and what was that?
So the second one I probably bought within 6 months. It was another triplex in the area. I bought it off market through a wholesaler, and I used a hard money loan to buy it. And then after we fixed it up, I refied it into a commercial mortgage.
That's cool. Did you know that was called the Burr method back then, or was it not a true Burr method?
I don't know if it was a true Burr. We did not call it the Burr method. My first investment was in 2009. So before a lot of stuff on social media and the internet. But at the same point, I was part of my local real estate investors group or association. And that's where I found the leads and the ways to do all this.
That's cool.
Yeah, knowledge and networking is are the two big things that really led to my success in this business.
What was your next step after that? Was it apartment syndication, or did you do some other small ones?
I consistently stayed with the smaller ones. I was working a full-time job. I was working a part-time job 5 days a week. And we had some little ones at home. Even though I was self-managing, I was getting to the point that I couldn't necessarily do a ton of the work myself. So we started partnering. And what I did is I found one partner, and we probably still own about 5 buildings together. But we bought some, I would still call them smaller multis. I mean, when I say smaller, like a quadplex, a 6-unit, stuff like that. You know, that was like the next step. But besides that, on the side, I was also buying. I tried to still purchase a small multi every year or two. And eventually, I went backwards from some people. By 2013 and 2014, I was starting to buy a single family here or a single family there, almost completely all off market, though.
Very cool. So how many years were you a history teacher?
I taught history for 17 years, middle school.
How many years ago did you quit that job?
I left 3 years ago.
And you were working at Sam's Club as well?
Yeah. So my part-time job, I was working between 23 and 28 hours a week. at Sam's, or when Sam's closed, I transitioned over to Walmart because it was one door down. And plus, I was coaching some sports here or there. All my kids are scouts, so I was a scout leader for a while for one of them, and staying super busy 7 days a week. But what was really cool with the real estate portfolio is that as much time as you want to put into it. So if you only have a half hour one day, that's fine. And if you have emergencies, you build a network so that someone can go and fix something. I didn't usually lift a hammer myself.
That's funny. I've got an electrician that's going to be over at one of my properties here in about half an hour. And it's that network that kind of is your safety net.
Absolutely. Eventually, you get to the point when I was managing about 15 doors myself, and my main contractor said he was moving on to other bigger and better things, that I started to look at property management as an option, third-party property management. Instead, hiring another contractor, kept him for a couple of years as I kept growing. And eventually, I did go to full property management.
Interesting. The first year that became a real estate investor, it was accidental. And I was my own property manager. And rather than understanding the vetting and the process that you can use to check on tenants, I would use my gut feeling. And all these seem like nice people. I got lucky on the first few.
You definitely have to be a little careful with some of that. I know that for me, I used to use credit scores a lot. And some people complained about that. And I said, you know what? That's one of the things that's pretty hard to lie about. I could tell you a story of a woman that was going to move into a first floor. Her husband was stationed out in Guantanamo Bay at the time, and her credit was completely horrendous. But his credit was okay. I almost had to move in, but like I said, it's all about the network. I asked a property manager in the area, and I asked her, I said, well, what do you think? She says, absolutely not. I said, why not? She says, number one, since he's stationed overseas, if she never pays you, you can never evict them. And number two, because her credit's so bad, if she wouldn't be able to get the utilities in her name, maybe she could get it in his name, but it would still be very tough. You might be stuck not paying, getting any rent, and probably forking over the utilities during the winter months. So I saved a lot of time and energy by passing on that one.
Sounds like you really dodged a bullet.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying, especially if you're a working professional, I'm not saying that you can't do well in the business. I'm saying that if you know more people and you learn as much as you can, it'll help save you. Roger, you're muted.
That's awesome. Your network is your net worth.
Definitely. I'm a firm believer in that. That's how I met you guys.
Right.
So, Frank, you obviously have done quite a bit of work, and it sounds like you're in a good way, a hustler. You're willing to put in the overtime. And I would say that effort you've put in over the years has really benefited you now and will hopefully continue to benefit you for the rest of your life. I've got two specific questions I want to ask you. I know that you have a company, and I'm probably going to botch how you pronounce it. Quahog? How do you say it?
Quahog Capital. It's a type of clam off the coast of Rhode Island.
Okay, so I wanted the story. I don't know what that is. Is there any more to that story?
I wanted something that was a little different. I wanted something that showed where I was from locally. So I just thought it was a cool name, and we have a cool design for it. It's just a Quahog, just a clamshell. And you'll see it on some TV shows sometimes. There's a cartoon, I forget what it's called, but it has a lot of Rhode Island in it that they use. The town that they're in is called Quahog, Rhode Island, which is not a real place.
Is this a clam you eat, or you just...
You can cook and eat it, stuff like that.
Maybe when we come to Rhode Island, we'll check that out.
Oh, definitely. We'll get you some clam cakes and chowder and some coffee milk as well.
Thank you for telling us that story. I also wanted to ask you about Real Agent Helper, which I believe is another company that you're running. And I mean, you were a history teacher, you were working other jobs, and you built this company at some point during that process. And I'm sure that's helped you along the way. Do you want to just share a little bit about that and maybe give a plug for your company?
Definitely a working professional. I was a workaholic. Grading papers and reading essays is not easy. But at the same point, I always had a passion for entrepreneurship. So what I started to do a year or two before I left teaching is I started to build a few little side hustles or brands. And each of them has done very well. I mean, so we have the Cashflow Kings, which is their own podcast. It's an educational brand. We've had different learning experiences and seminars. I run the local RIA, which is the largest RIA in the area. And then Real Agent Helper is our virtual assistant business. Basically, what I wanted to do is I wanted to figure out a way to have an online company, but also help my friends. And what we do is we use the power of the internet to hire people from different countries and to help my friends get more time into their day. I'm literally able to run it part-time. We generate over 6 figures a month in revenue. I help a lot of people that it actually helps me build my network as well. Because my first deal doing something out of state was because one of my clients, I basically asked them, hey, how can I get more involved in syndications or in the larger apartment complexes? And he referred me to someone else. And you guys know those people. And we bought a property in Idaho, which was a great deal overall. And that was just through helping others. I'm a firm believer that if you help others, things will come back to you in a good way.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. Frank, you probably don't know this. One of our foundational episodes earlier, we talked about Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and we talked specifically about the cash flow quadrant. And I bet you're familiar with the cash flow quadrant. There's the employee, the self-employed, the business owner, and the investor. And the reason I'm bringing that up right now is because when I'm listening to your story, it sounds like you have been in every one of those quadrants, at least a little bit, maybe not the self-employed one, but I'm talking about it because I want our listeners to recognize that you have been in the different quadrants. There's pros and cons to being in each. Do you want to talk at all about how your past jobs or whatever you want to call them fall into those quadrants and what that looks like for you now?
I love that book. That's actually the first Robert Kiyosaki book that I read. And that's one of the reasons why I like one of our brand names, the Cashflow Kings, was because of the Cashflow Quadrant. And with that being said, when I was working that part-time job at Sam's Club, I actually ripped off a piece of cardboard boxes for the shelves. As I was listening to the book, I wrote down a list of my 5 closest friends. And I wrote down what they did for work. And all of them were E-employees. And after that, I wrote down what their salaries were. I guess on what I thought they made every year. What was awesome about that was that I'm still friends with all those people. But at the same point, if you really want to level up, if you really want to grow and become more successful, I started to make a list of who I wanted to be more friends with. I thought of some people that I knew and people that I wasn't necessarily close to, but I wanted to get closer to. And those were people that were in those other quadrants. Don't forget, the S is not just self-employed. It's also specialist as well. It could be an attorney, it could be an accountant, self-employed, but specialist. There's some kind of specialty they're good at. That's one. And then the big business, we're getting there with Real Agent Helper. The VA business, we have almost 100 employees now. So we're continuing to grow that and build systems. Your investor, whether it's active or passively, invested in thousands of apartments across 9 markets right now. One of the things he talks about in the book is if you want to be an employee your whole life, you can become a well-paid employee, but the tax benefits are being on the other side, being either a big business owner or an investor. And one of the things he talks about is there are people that can be in all of them. And while I don't plan on having a W-2 job again anytime soon, I do love being able to have little spots in each of the other quadrants.
Would you agree, Frank, that it's not impossible, but definitely much more challenging to retire or become financially free if you're only in the E quadrant?
Well, especially today, yes. I mean, when we got with retirement funds changing and the stock market, if you're just purely working a job, obviously the I is investing. So even if you're just doing a little bit of investing, but not really a pure investor, yeah, I think it's pretty hard. I mean, CEOs can do it, especially if you got a golden parachute or something else. Teachers, I think, are going to struggle. Locally in my area, we had a city that went bankrupt. And the first thing they went after was the retirement benefits for that pension, which was quite shocking. They actually cut benefits to people. You know, people that are 80 and 90 years old that thought they were going to have a retirement for the rest of their lives. Plus, we all know that inflation's killing you, too. $100,000 in 1980 is much different than $100,000 today. So you got to think about those kind of things. Yeah, it's pretty tough as just an employee. Is it possible? Yeah, but I think it's getting harder and harder.
Thanks for sharing that. Roger, do you want me to jump into the Dominican Republic, or do you have stuff you want to go over before that?
One thing to say before we change, and whether this gets recorded or not, to show how bad inflation is, yesterday we went to the drugstore and Bonnie had to get some medication for one of her kids, and we spent $3 on a candy bar. It was $2.89. And I, you know, I'm almost 50 and I'm sitting there at the drugstore and I so bad wanted to pull the, back in my day, we used to pay 45 cents for a candy bar. And it said that I'll wait like a month and a half until I'm at least 50.
So going with that story, I mean, being a history teacher, when I used to teach American history to the kids and how much the dollar has been devalued by 99% in the last 100 plus years, I used to explain to them that their great grandparents, when they'd want to buy any candy, it was actually a bag of candy for a penny. And then as inflation has and the American dollar has gone down in value, even when I was a kid, you could easily get one piece of candy for a penny. Now, I don't even know if you can find that around here anymore.
Maybe you know,
just that whole concept.
Not even one of those Swedish fish that's unwrapped.
Right?
We used to go to the Easy Mart and buy like 40 or 50 Swedish fish, and they'd count them out on the countertop, which was completely unsterile. This is about you. This whole episode is about you, but I have one quick history lesson. When I graduated in high school, that was 1991. In that year, the median house price in Salt Lake City was $76,000. 13 years later, it did a full double at $152,000. And then 13 years later, it was almost exactly again double at $300,000. So in a natural market, I believe that the double here is 13 years. That's appreciation and inflation combined. And I've argued multiple times with other people that if we weren't having the government meddle with the mortgage-backed securities, we would have seen another true double and another one, again, over 13 years. So I use that for a lot of my investing. If you want to figure out the appreciation side, you can still make a lot of money, but it just takes a long time and also helps to buy in the right time in the market.
Well, that's why we own real estate, is to hedge that inflation bet as part of it. Assets grow in value.
So the next thing I want to talk about is you and your partner in the Dominican Republic. So I have three different stories and I'd like you to pick one and tell how it developed. First one would be Real Agent Helper. The second one would be your 16 unit in Punta Cana. The third one would be your motorcycle dump truck that I got the privilege of driving.
If we have time, I'll pick two out of the three, or you can choose which one. The dump truck, I don't know enough about, so we'll pass on that one. But to tell you more about the Real Agent Helper business, basically, my partner, Pedro, came to a real estate meeting. And I, even though I was working 7 days a week, I still made sure I made at least one networking event every month, you know, at the time. And it was our local RIA. And he shows up, and he was a real estate agent, brand new. And he walked up to me, his name is Pedro, and he says, "Hey, I'm a brand new agent. I'd love to work with you, this and that. Would you consider it?" And I said, I'm always meeting agents. I said, "We're in a RIA room. Half the people in here are agents." I said, "But yeah, I'm definitely willing to build a relationship. And over time, I'd enjoy working with you." So he's standing there next to me, and about 2 or 3 minutes later, someone else is like, "Hey, I'm a brand new real estate agent. I'd love to work with you. I know you're pretty good size in the industry." This Pedro looks at me, says, "I am never going to get to do a deal with you." And I said, no. "Friend me on Facebook, build a relationship, and over time, we will be able to do a deal." So 2 or 3 years later, go along, and he builds a couple online businesses. And he makes a post. He says, "I would love to allow any of my friends to learn how to start their own online business, and I'll help them for free." And he had a Zoom call on a Sunday night. And just like Jesus was not respected in his hometown, only three people show up. He literally was already out of the rat race with one online business. And nobody else decided to hear him talk about financial freedom. Me, already a millionaire, already working 7 days a week, killing myself, said, "I need to learn how to build an online business." So by the second meeting, only two people showed up. And by about the third meeting, it was just me going to the meetings. And there's a whole bunch of different options on what kind of business you could start, you know, online wholesaling, online store. And the option that really came out to me was the virtual assistant business, because I have a big real estate network. And if you want to squeeze more time into a day, why not get a VA? So over time, in weeks of courses, he basically said, okay, there you go. You just started the business for under $2,000. And it's like, no. I didn't start a business. We started the business. And I basically brought him back into the business and said, I wouldn't have any of this without you. So why not work together? Obviously, his mother was very excited that he got to work with a millionaire that started the business together. And that business has done very well for us. Going with that, he's Dominican. He didn't use his real estate license anymore. So he had it at in Punta Cana. He had his, what do you call it when you have your real estate license up at an agency? So he had it down in Punta Cana, and he's always trying these little side businesses and this and that. So I took him to a real estate event out in Dallas, Texas, back in October of 2021. And we met a guy who was buying hotels. And Pedro said, he's like, I'm going to fly to Punta Cana right after this. I'll look for hotels for this guy. So he showed him a few. And me, I was doing syndications that you guys know about. I was buying large apartment buildings. Basically involves me being actively involved in finding the deal or running the deal and then finding investors to come together. So you guys know there's people that get a good amount of money and they don't have time and they just want to put their money to work. So they might invest passively in a deal. So we had just closed on our first deal in Wichita Falls, Texas, which was probably my third or fourth deal at the time. But it was the first deal I really had Pedro, I was talking to him about. And he says, you know something? Someday I hope to own a property in my parents' home country. I said, dude, you're hanging out with one of the cash flow kings. Let's make this happen. So it became one of my passion projects to help my friend who already helped me make good money in the virtual assistant space to help him buy a property. And what we did is we worked together. We looked at hotels and we bought a small boutique hotel about a 4-minute walk to the water in Punta Cana. And it's not the perfect hotel, but you can't always get trophy properties that are going to make you money. And while this one is beautiful, it's not that old, it does need work, and we've been gradually making it better. It's just another great story that I have for working and helping my friends become successful.
I love it.
And you can do this, like I said, it's a little harder to do it if you're working 7 days a week, but it's about that gradual progression. You know, you buy that first property, you have it start to pay for itself over time. It might actually generate a little bit of a profit. Use that profit, use that money that you're still working, and you try to buy that next property. And eventually it's going to grow. And with inflation, like you're talking about, Roger, over time, you can sell one of those assets and you can put it into something else. It's going to generate more money.
Absolutely. And the best way to do that is to look at your ROE, your return on equity, and decide what the best thing you can do with that is and what it's currently offering you.
That first triplex that I bought, I still own it. It was fully paid off for a while. I ended up getting a hard money loan to buy the hotel from it. But over time, I didn't make money the first 2 or 3 years with that property. The first year, it needed a new heating system. The second year, I put on a new roof. The third year, I had to evict one of the tenants, and they did not do a good job of maintaining it. So I needed to do a full gut remodel. You know, the fourth year, we put in a new driveway, and it plugged the sewer system, and I had a backup and everything else. But over time, I was still paying down that mortgage. And over time, I was still generating more revenue from the property. So it definitely helped. And now, like I said, I have a 50% loan to value on that property. And big whoops, it makes good money. It pays for itself. And it helps me generate and do other things with investing.
Frank, would you have done anything differently now that you know what you know on that first property?
I mean, yes. With that being said, you don't know how lucky you were at that time of the market, and you've learned so much. Now, at the same point, I might have passed on that deal. Sometimes too much knowledge actually hurts you sometimes. I would have been too worried, this or that. I would have tried to squeeze in a little lower price. I might have missed it. But at the same point, how do you do well in this business? By taking action. It's all about taking action. That analysis paralysis it's never going to get you anywhere. The taking action allows you to learn so much faster. But I'm not saying to dump $1 million and overpay for some property. I'm saying that if you can buy something that with your knowledge, you think it works, go out there and do it. Because that's when you really gain knowledge. So I had a friend that invested in one of our recent deals. And the next time I spoke to him, he had so many real estate questions. I was laughing. He's all apologizing. I said, no. I said, you're going from theory to actually ownership. That's why you have questions. You weren't excited about it because it was all theory before. But now you're excited about it because you actually have your own damn money in the thing. You invested $50,000 in one of my deals. Yeah, you want to know what's going on with this, what's going on with that. So it's pretty fun.
It's kind of a little digression, but I had my own property that I bought back in 2014. More recently, I took a hard money loan on it so that I could fix it up, and I'll probably 1031 it into something else. But my ROE was sitting at about 0.5%. And it was a good ROE in my mind because I was making over $1,000 a month in cash flow. I had to do almost nothing. And yet the money just got automatically deposited in my bank account. And rather than being active and using it and leveraging it, I was just sitting back on my laurels and enjoying it and fixing that right now. And I'm probably one of our syndications or something to that effect. And it's kind of an embarrassing thing that we all kind of need to face facts and decide what our highest and best is. And if we want to really rise above, we have to do the hard things.
I mean, I would say that there's nothing wrong with having a small percentage of your portfolio involved in safer returns. But you can definitely put it to work and do other things. I've had deals where you thought you were going to make money. And like you said, it's not really returning as well as it was. And I have had to sell it. But there's other ones that I've just kept because especially if it has a loan to value, you can easily use that as part of your portfolio to show you have a lower loan to value across the whole book.
Absolutely.
Speaking of your portfolio, Frank, you've got that one hotel in the Dominican Republic. Do you think you'll do more down there?
Absolutely. We're working on a few different things. We're working on possibly buying another hotel. We're negotiating. It's about a 4-minute drive from the one we already have. And the main reason is because of economies of scale. I mean, we're already going to have to file a Dominican tax return. We already have employees. So adding one more actually reduces some of our costs. And it helps us with advertising costs and everything else as well. Besides that, I mean, we've looked at deals in other countries as well. So I still have a good sized number of units, mostly through JV locally. I have a few things about 4 hours away in a different state. And then I have ownerships in about 7 or 8 other markets around the country.
That's awesome. Good job building up your portfolio.
Yeah. If you need any help doing any vetting on the inspections for your Punta Cana properties, I would love to provide you my services.
How much of a great time you had the last time you were there. And, I hope to hang out with you again down there some point.
Yeah, the only downside is I won't be able to get engaged there again.
Hey, you can only make memories once. I mean, you could, but I don't think your fiance would be happy about that.
So, Frank, you were telling us that you are running the Rhode Island Real Estate Investors Group, and you've already mentioned a couple stories about running into people that are kind of starting their real estate journey. A lot of the people that might be listening to this podcast are trying to learn more about investing or just real estate investing specifically. What advice would you give to someone who's just getting started in real estate investing?
So if they plan on starting small, I would say that you do not need to buy some expensive program. I would say that if you don't own a house right now, house hacking, buying a small multi and renting out the other units is markets that's easier to do than others. Like I said, I joined my local REIA probably about 5 years before I bought my first investment property. And with that being said, I gradually learned things. I went to the meetings. Most of the time, I kept my mouth shut. And over time, people start to get to know you and you talk more. And then eventually you speak on a panel or two. And then eventually you run the darn thing. Start small. Speak to other people that are doing the same thing that you want to do. We all know that we all have friends and family that are naysayers about the business, about real estate, et cetera. Those aren't the people you should be getting advice from on how to grow this business or how to get involved. You need to find people that are actually doing it. I've borrowed millions of dollars from people in that room. I have 5 partners of people in that real estate room. I've bought at least 12 or 15 properties from people inside that room. It's very much, most of them are a positive network of people that are like-minded. I would say there are people that are very transactional, but I consider myself and a lot of people in that room anyway, very much more relationship-based business.
You're saying your piece of advice would be to start building your network because that's where a lot of the value is created and you can learn a lot from the people around you. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I said it earlier during this. I said knowledge and networking. Build as much knowledge as you can. Listen to podcasts like this. Go on YouTube and listen. Not all the advice you see online is good advice. I will say that. But and so take it with a grain of salt. But as you hear it from more people, you'll start to learn. You know, nothing wrong with reading books about it as well. Knowledge and networking, where you build those relationships of people that have already done it and are willing to help you do it without it costing you an arm and a leg.
So a couple times on this episode today, Frank, you've talked about people investing with you or passively in deals. Just talking kind of generally about either active investing or passive investing in real estate, would you say that if somebody wanted to be an active investor, that it's really easy and it takes hardly any time? Or is it is that kind of an illusion? Is there quite a bit of work that goes into being an active real estate investor?
When I think of an active real estate investor, I think of someone that's going out there, looking at the deals, making offers, and then after that, they actually take over the property, and then they have to either manage it, they're either doing the work themselves, or they're hiring out to do the work, they're managing the tenants, they're doing the paperwork, they're filling out their tax returns, etc. There's a whole bunch of different level of active with that. That takes a lot of work sometimes. I mean, since I was working 7 days a week and still managing 15 doors, I was active, but I wasn't active at the point where I was actually doing the work. You don't have to do the work and you can still be technically active in the game. You could be looking for flips. You still have to spend time on it. So, I mean, you might need to spend on average an hour a day working on your business. There's your job and there's your business. And we're talking about your business, you being a real estate investor. Your job is something that if you quit, they'll forget about you in a week. Something happens to you, they don't care. They'll try to replace you. I know the job market's kind of tight, but passively, there are people that can definitely do it passively, especially if you're working 60 hours a week and you're making good money or you enjoy what you do and you don't want to learn the skills to become active. You can passively invest in other people's deals, either through hard money lending or investing in someone's syndication deals, etc. There are ways. I had a Bigger Pockets post a few years ago. It was a viral post. What's holding you back in real estate? In the end, it was a lot of people giving me excuses. But I built a little informative. Pause for a sec. I built some information going with that. And what I did is I call it the three-legged stool approach. Basically, you either have money, you have time, or you have experience. If you can become successful in one of those things, you can find partners to do the rest. I call it the three-legged stool approach to real estate, with the seat on top being the networking. And it's just like a cool thing where some people have money so they can invest passively in other people's deals. Some people have time, so maybe they'll go out wholesaling. They might not have the money, or they'll do driving for dollars. Some people have the experience, so they might be actually rehabbing the projects. So as you can see, there's many different aspects to real estate.
Love it, Frank. Thanks for sharing that.
That's awesome. The one I want to steal is, if you want more time in your day, hire a VA, and then I'll sell it back to you.
There you go. I've been saying that for a while. I'm sure it's somewhere.
Just need to copyright it before you get to your lawyer. I want to mention something that I think is really cool, and you say, going to a RIA and networking. And so I had a cool moment, and it's not to brag, but it's, you know, your network is your net worth. And I went to a local RIA, and afterwards, we had about 10 of us that sat down to get lunch afterwards. So we went to this restaurant and I looked at the table and I'm like, you know, I've done a deal with this guy, I've done a deal with this guy, and I've done a deal with this guy. And so one of them was the syndication that we just did, $10 million blooming into whatever it sells for. One of them was the guy that was the realtor, that was the seller's agent. On the self-storage facility that me and Ben Lakey did. The valuation on that, like 7 million build, 12 million sell, or 13 million sell, we don't know to date. And it was just really cool to go, you know, these guys are the rock stars of the industry, and I get the privilege of sitting with them. More recently, the guy that was the seller's agent on that piece of dirt that was just a construction yard with trucks and trailers and a bunch of junk, an office and some good supplies too, but a bunch of junk, is now the most likely guy to be the buyer's agent. He was the seller's agent, and he'll be the buyer's agent on the sale of that storage facility. So that puts the sales on this table is pushing into the $40 million range, you know, where there's going to be some doubles in there. So it's not that big, and I'm not going to make that much money on all of those deals by any stretch. But being in that place with those people is really something that I want to be more of and do more of. I think you've really perfected that.
So that goes back to the Cashflow Quadrant book and me writing down that list of names. And also going to your RIA, we got to go for real consistently. It's all about consistency. You can't just go there once and say, oh, I didn't find any deals, I'm out. Now, it might take 6 months just going once a month. And over time, like you're saying, Raj, I'll give you a similar story. A lot of times after the meetup or the meeting, we go out to dinner and I go to different groups. But there was one I was probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And when I was sitting down, if you really look around the table, I'm like, I own 5 buildings with that guy. The next guy, he wholesaled me my second deal. The next guy, he's my main insurance person. The next guy, he's loaned me over $1 million. So just going around that table and building relationships and stuff like that.
That's awesome. What are your goals and what does your future look like?
I would say that my net worth will continue growing. I will continue hustling because I enjoy the art of a deal in some ways. I don't see myself retiring from this anytime soon, though, you know, it would be okay to take a couple of days off here or there. I would love to see my wife retired from what she does. She's so worried about medical coverage that she continues to work. And depending on the deals, depending on the cash flow, it does help that she does work. We don't necessarily need it, especially if I could have her create her own side business would be great too, but I don't see it happening, and that's okay. I still love her. Besides that, I'm just trying to do as many deals as I can out there through natural growth. I've actually passed on a number of deals lately just because my network's only so big, and you have to be choosy sometimes. There's a lot of opportunities out there. Really have to find the best ones that are going to work with how you want to grow. I'd love to do another deal with you guys in the future. We'll see what happens. And based on you guys inviting me here, I think we have a pretty good relationship. So I'm very thankful. I'm very blessed in many ways. I don't speak to brokers. Every deal that I've done in the last 2 or 3 years is basically someone either reaching out to me or me saying, hey, how can I help you? And joining a deal or joining a team or partnering on something. It's really awesome. I'm a big believer in partnerships. Every deal I've been a part of, partnership. Actually, the deals that I usually make lose money on are often ones that I've tried to do it alone. Sometimes you don't always see. Sometimes you need like objective opinion sometimes, or someone to even just throw ideas off. I have one friend that he says he will never do a deal outside of a partnership because he gets too emotional with his own money. And he needs someone else to look at it on the side and see it more objectively than he does.
I want to pull out of what you just said is you have a great mindset, and you're saying that there's a lot of opportunities coming to you, and you're being selective about the investments that you choose to go into. And I think that's great for our listeners to recognize is that there is a lot of investment opportunities in this world, and getting in a place where you can be exposed to those is probably the first thing. And then the second part is having the knowledge to understand which investments will work best for you and the goals that you're trying to accomplish, because not all opportunities that are presented to you are going to be good ones. And being able to sort through that and find what works really well for you is in itself a skill. So thanks for sharing that.
No problem. I mean, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, they talk about it. Robert talks about it in the book, and he made a game about it. Cashflow 101. You need to train your mind to see opportunities every day. And besides the fact driving around, you can see opportunities every day. I literally get opportunities across my email each and every day. And I'm passing on over 99% of them so that I can pull out the best ones. I'm so lucky that to be able to do that.
Roger, you got anything else, or you want me to go to Final Four?
I think that the passing on 99% of the deals is an exact quote that Warren Buffett says. So that's cool.
Well, Warren Buffett made it easy. I mean, I do love Warren Buffett. When I was a teacher, I had a bonus class. I could teach whatever I wanted for one period a day. It was a way to bring them up And it was supposed to teach to the test or build their skills, but I actually persuaded my school district to allow me to teach finance and stocks. So we'd always show at least one Warren Buffett autobiography. And one of the things I love him speaking about is him being hitting with a baseball bat and being able to take pitches. And think about every opportunity is like a pitch. And there's no strike zone. There's no balls. They just keep throwing pitches at you, and you get to swing at whatever ones you want. So right now, that's what you guys are doing, and that's what I'm lucky to be doing, is that we have pitches, pitch decks, and pitches that go by us each and every day, and we only have to swing at the ones we want.
Absolutely. I probably get something like 50 deals in my email a week that are like, buy this, buy that. And sometimes, especially in this current market, the wholesalers are not only just blasting out and having a whatever deal hit 10,000 cash buyers, they're calling you and asking you specific questions like, do you think that my seller finance deal is a good deal? Is there some reason why you haven't pulled the trigger? Because I know you like seller finance. And then you got to break it down to them because you want to teach them. And you know that if you say, this are my parameters or what I'm going to buy at, that the time they get that, they're going to be like, aha, and they'll bring you that deal. So yesterday I was doing the same thing with a seller finance deal in Ogden, which is generally a great rental market. And I had to explain to the rental meter versus actual payment was so upside down. That'd be like, I'd given you $40,000 just so that I could have the privilege of giving you $300 every single month until the market turns around or it refinances.
You're tempering expectations.
Yep. And teaching buying strategies, like you handle objections and you get people's highest and best. And then you hope the next time you're sitting down with somebody, you can be like, well, I don't think it'll sell if we have 5% cash on cash return. But if we could bump it up just a little bit to 8%, I think this would go smoothly and we could handle it quickly and make it easy for all parties involved. And that's part of negotiation and sales.
I don't even call them deals anymore. I joke that people send me opportunities. They're not usually good opportunities, but people send me opportunities.
All right, guys, we've reached the end of our podcast and it's time for the final four. Frank, are you ready for four questions?
Hopefully I'll be able to answer them.
All right. We've talked about this a little bit, but what is your favorite book?
I'm going to have to go with Cashflow Quadrant, Robert Kiyosaki. Like I said, that was the first one that I had read. Definitely one of my favorites. It's a great book. He's an easy read overall.
Absolutely. Number two, what brings you happiness?
Besides family, I would say hanging out with other real estate professionals and entrepreneurs and talking about real estate.
Very good. Okay, number three, describe what your future retirement looks like.
Future retirement would involve looking at opportunities, but only an hour or two a day and just enjoying life. I get to do a lot of that already now. And obviously being able to travel wherever I want, I already do that as well. We're pretty close on some of these things, but I just have to release a little bit more responsibility on certain.
Very cool. As kind of a follow-up to that, do you see yourself retiring there in Rhode Island or Punta Cana or splitting time?
I don't know if Punta Cana will be the final place. I mean, we've been negotiating a possible deal in Greece as well. And some other places. So I got plenty of time to travel and decide where that settling in is going to be. Definitely done more travel in the past 3 years than I did in the last 25. So we'll see. I mean, I've been able to. Looking at properties alone is a business expense. So, and we have been buying in other parts of the countries. I don't think Salt Lake City is going to be high on that list either. I'm not really a snowbird. I'm not really into snow and cold. If I had to pick somewhere in the United States, I could see Texas or the Carolinas.
Yeah, before you knock Utah, you should probably come here when it's not cold and experience some of the other things. Like, before you knock Utah, let's go to Moab. I'll show you my highest and best.
Let's be honest. I'm working on that Utah checklist and stuff like that. I have been there in the summer once, and I enjoy Utah. So if I was going to be in Utah, I'd only be half time.
Yeah. And if Ben isn't up to speed and our listeners, we have a list that's 20 things that are you Utah meme And some of those things are very typical, like fry sauce and such like that. Going to Crown Burger, I think when Frank comes here in March, we've talked a little bit about checking off some of those. So Red Iguana, Ice Blocking, Donut Falls. Maybe we'll do the networking event too, but we'll see.
To give a quick example, since I was doing, when I was working 7 days a week, besides 1 week of summer vacation that we would probably drive to like Pennsylvania or something else, outside of the Northeast, I had only been to two states like ever before. But now that I am able to fly almost anytime I want, I own properties in South Carolina and South Dakota and Idaho and Texas and New Mexico and everything else. And I've been to most of them, so.
That's awesome. And I'd also add that I've done the same thing, and I've also done these wildly ridiculous vacations, like visiting your hotel in Punta Cana, staying on a private island in Belize, going to Costa Rica, and all of these things were business expenses, and all of these things were also way cheaper than you would imagine.
Like, absolutely. I went to Egypt, and that was our first business meeting for Real Agent Helper.
Awesome. Final four, number four. What do you think is the best way to give back?
I give back every day through education and networking, helping others so many ways in real estate. I will probably field at least two calls today. We'll see, maybe more, of people asking me a quick question to help them with their business. And I'm happy to do it. And most of the time, I don't charge anything for it. Sometimes there are people that say, hey, let me bring you in on the next deal, or send me a little thank you, or buy me dinner or lunch or something like that. That's fine too. That's one way in which I give back. I mean, I have a background in school teaching, and I always will. So,
yeah, I think one thing that's been a current theme of this whole podcast, this episode today, is you are forever learner. Like, you're probably smarter than most of the people out there, and yet you still have that thirst for knowledge.
Well, I thank you. I think we all have a little bit of self-doubt about ourselves. I do not consider myself the smartest person in this podcast. I just consider myself the luckiest person on this podcast. So, you know.
Well, we appreciate you being here, Frank. And let's make sure we give our listeners a way to find you online. So what's the best way to get in touch with you online and social?
Through social media, we have a podcast called The Cashflow Kings. We're pretty big on Instagram with that, Facebook, my own personal name, Frank Catalano, P-A-T-A-L-A-N-O. Or you can always send me an email at frank@ribuy.com. R-I because I'm in Rhode Island, and buy because I buy properties.
And we've got those links that we'll put in the show notes for everybody as well. So we just appreciate you being here, Frank.
Thank you, sir. It's fun times. I love telling stories, so this worked out.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us on today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we'll see you next time on the Retire Wealthy and Happy podcast.
Thanks for being here, Frank.
Thank you, guys, Frank.
Hope you got value from this episode. And if you have a minute, then take the time to leave an honest written review for the podcast, because we take those reviews seriously, and it'll help us serve you better on the next episodes. And most importantly, be sure to start taking action so you can control your financial future today.